They will fly anything, drugs, medicine, guns, you name it, anything, anywhere in the world, for a price. Who are these outlaw air cargo crews, and why is the U.S. military apparently using them? We'll talk to the author of the new book, Outlaws, Inc., just ahead on the Rick and Donna Martinez Show.
Live, local, and all about the Triangle, Rick and Donna Martinez on News Radio 680 WPTF and WPTF.com.
Well, I'll tell you what, I love the magazine Men's Journal. And when I picked up the latest issue, folks, I read this fascinating, entertaining, just amazing story headlined Phantom Air. And it is an excerpt from the book written by my next guest. The book is called Outlaws, Inc. The author is Matt Potter, and he joins me now at News Radio 680 WPTF. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on. How are you?
Well, I am doing well. I got to tell you, first of all, I cannot wait to get your entire book, because based on what I have read about it, this is going to be a fun read, an amazing read. Tell us, who are these, what I would call, crazy outlaw air cargo pilots, and why did you get interested in them?
They're Russians. Typically, Russians, Ukrainians, Belarusians, and they were the young grunts who got sent out to the Soviet Union's version of Vietnam, I guess you'd call it, which was the Soviet-Afghan War in the 80s. And they went out there, and they fought, and they were all 19 years old. They picked up terrible drug habits and so on and so forth. They came back just in time to be told, well, you know, thanks for all your fighting, but your country's just imploded. The USSR that sent you out there doesn't exist anymore. We're bust. We'll have your uniform back. We can't afford your pension. No back pay. And you know what? Because we've brought all the soldiers home at once, there's not enough houses for all of you. You're on your own. So these guys, very resourceful, did whatever anyone would do in that situation. They looked at their old bomber plane that they'd just flown back, looked at the general, and thought, I'll take the plane. And that's what they did. This was their chance to go into, if you like, freelance entrepreneur territory. They took it down to some airfield in sort of Central Asia, Kazakhstan, literally, you know, sprayed it with primer and painted man with truck, anything considered, on the side. And that was the day that it was a big bang that spun them out across the globe. And as right to this day, they're flying these old things like sort of Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon across the earth. And there's no paperwork. It's all cash jobs. And they'll take whatever you got.
So I guess on the one hand, you could say these guys are pretty slick entrepreneurs. They went out, you know, and they needed a job. And so they went out and found a need and filled it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, really, you know, they are, in any other life, in any other existence, if they hadn't been from the Soviet Union, if they were Americans, they're the kind of guys that Bruce Springsteen would have been singing about. I mean, they were really, you know, I've got to do something to feed my kids. I know what I'm going to do. I'll work as hard as I can, et cetera, et cetera. The fact is, instead of driving a 10-ton truck, they're driving a 100-ton, 4-engine, 20-wheeled superplane. And the fact is, when you've got a plane that big, you've got to take enough things. You can't afford to fly empty. Any taxi driver will tell you. So if you're coming into a conflict area on behalf of the UN, well, the UN might pay you to fly there and fly those medicines and those tents in, but they won't pay you to fly anything out. So that's when you've got to have contacts on the ground and say, okay, does anyone want anything taken out of the country? And you can imagine, when that country's a place like Afghanistan, or when that country's a place like Haiti, the temptations are there.
Oh, one can only imagine. In fact, yeah. You know, one of the interesting questions that is kind of the takeaway of what I've read about your book is, you know, are these guys saints or sinners?
Well, that's the very, very difficult thing about them. I mean, the fact is that they are the only guys, a lot of the time, for a lot of these conflict zones and places in dire need of help, let alone places like Iraq and Afghanistan, when our coalition governments need somebody, you know, quick, who can fly in all these billions of new Iraqi banknotes without the face of Saddam Hussein on them, for example, or loads of new building materials, loads of arms and things to support and generators for our troops. A lot of the time, sure, the military can do it, but they're over capacity. I mean, Donald Rumsfeld said, we need non-state actors to help. We need the private sector. These guys are the private sector to the max. So a lot of the time, they're the only game in town. You want something taken into Afghanistan? One of the guys in the book tells me, you know, we asked an Australian crew and a British crew and an American crew, and they all started talking to us about extra danger money and health and safety regs. These guys don't do that. So actually, they'll go there. They're very cheap. Some of them will take in your cargo. There is one guy who will take it in free of charge if you're a charity. Now, all the charities are thinking, goodness me, what a very public-spirited individual. No, he's flying there because he knows that he's got the connections on the ground to put his plane in the right place to meet up with somebody who wants something else taken on somewhere else. So yes, they are the saints, but they are the sinners. And the trick is for our governments, if you stop the sinner, if you say to them, shut them down, then you got nobody to take your aid to Somalia. You got nobody to get your reconstruction equipment to Iraq.
Now, you've actually been on one of these flights.
Yeah, I have. And, you know, I still scream in the night about it. I mean, the worst thing is when your flight, they got this great thing called, it was started, actually, invented by Americans in Vietnam, this maneuver called the Kaysan maneuver, which is where, because they know they're flying into Afghanistan, they're flying into Somalia, there's going to be crazies, you know, yeehawing guys with bazookas and rocket launchers, just trying to shoot them out of the air, a little bit like kind of wreckers would try and wreck boats on the shore because they knew that there was lots of precious cargo in it. So they try and make these things crash. Now, these pilots, in order to get around that, they approach the airport just as you would on a passenger jet, but then just by the perimeter where they know these guys with the guns are, they zoom up into the air to almost the point of losing consciousness and then dive bomb the runway from a very great height so that they're too far out of range from the missiles. Now, I've done that on one of these. It's a 200-ton plane, and it was the plane that the Soviet cosmonauts used to use for anti-gravity training, which just gives you some idea of how fast it can go. It can go down, and you're literally coming up out of your seat. I mean, your seat's not fixed to the floor anyway; it's a plastic chair, and you're flying around. And somebody's going, they're shooting at us, and you can see the cracks in the tarmac heading towards the windscreen of this 200-ton plane. And at the time where you turn around to ask the navigator, mate, is this normal? And he turns around to you, and you notice that he stinks of booze. And this is actually fairly normal. I mean, that was a good landing. And then, you know, I'll come out. It'll take me 5 minutes to stop throwing up, and you know, feel my way to the exit and down the hatch. And these guys were just, you know, take the jacket off the hook and walk out just like they finished a late shift in a Moscow minicab.
Well, Matt, do these cadre of pilots and their crazy old airplanes, I mean, are they interconnected? Do they have like a trade group, you know, where they kind of bid out jobs, or are they just completely freelance?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so this is actually a topic of some conjecture, and there are a couple of big trials coming up where one in New York very soon, a guy called Victor Boot, who has been known, rightly or wrongly, as the Merchant of Death. And what happens is the authorities find it very, very difficult to pin any kind of paper trail on these guys. So they are loose affiliations. They are really like, I guess you'd say, in any kind of small town, do the guys who have the white pickup trucks who zoom around taking deliveries for cash and helping people, students, move house and things like that, do they know each other? Are they affiliated? Well, yeah, you know, they'll probably put a job, you know, I can put a job your way because I'm busy that day. But actually, there won't be anything like a union, and there certainly won't be anything like an official payroll. One of the frustrations that everybody has with these guys is paper trail. It was so hard trying to keep in touch with them, to take more and more flights with them. They have each one of them has like 200 SIM cards, the chips for their telephones.
Wow.
They change every day what country they're in. They eat, sleep, they socialize, they drink on the wing. They're like swallows or migratory birds that touch down as little as possible because they know that every time they do, somebody's going to be gunning for them. It's really like an old Wild West thing.
We're talking with Matt Potter. He is the author of a book that I am just dying to read the whole thing. I've read an excerpt, and as you can tell, it is an incredible story, and he is wonderful at telling the story. We're going to continue with Matt Potter, author of Outlaws, Inc., in just a moment. We're going to ask Matt to explain to us what happened when the U.S. military needed to get a generator into an airfield in Afghanistan and nobody wanted to do the job. We'll tell you what happened when they turned to the outlaw crews. That's just ahead on News Radio 680 WPTF. Well, I am pleased to be joined by author Matt Potter. His book called Outlaws, Inc. is really getting a lot of publicity, as I can tell you, I think it should, because I've read an excerpt from this book, and it is a knockout. It's one you definitely want to get. And it is the story of these outlaw air cargo crews that around the world basically fly anything to anywhere as long as the price is right. And folks, among the people who use them is the U.S. military to try to get things in and out of Afghanistan. Hey, Matt, tell us all the story that you relate in your excerpt in Men's Journal magazine about the U.S. military needing to get a generator to an airfield in Afghanistan but they couldn't find anybody who would take the job. What happened?
Oh, yeah. No, this is, if anything sums these guys up, this is the one. So the U.S. military needed to get, it was in the Badlands out in Helmand province, and they needed to get this great big generator. And when I say a generator, it's not one of the things that you'd have outside the back of a mobile home. I mean, this is something sort of 200 meters high. And they needed to get that thing out into the wild. And the problem was not only that it was bandit-controlled territory, because, of course, the military guys, our military guys, were trying to do as best as they could to sort of hold them off and create some space. But the problem was also that there was no fuel for hundreds and hundreds of miles. There was no available fuel. So anybody who flew in would need to know how to get out without any fuel. So the job went out. I mean, it's posted up on bulletin boards, and all the charter guys were saying, oh, you know, it's priced at $500,000, but we can't find anyone. The deadline was approaching, and on deadline date, they got this call, and a guy with a Russian accent who introduced himself only as the contact said, we can do this for you. Sure. $2 million in advance.
Oh.
So by this point, they didn't have any choice. So, okay, $2 million it is in advance. Here cometh the day. The U.S. The soldiers and the guys in command were all standing around waiting for this generator, and in screamed this 200-ton cargo plane held together with scotch tape and string, and there it lands, and the guys, you know, unload, winch down and just drop this generator. So there it is, and then they sit down and start lighting up a cigarette and having a bit of a leisurely smoke. All these drunk Russians, and the American guys go, so look, guys, you know, this is quite dangerous. How are you going to get the plane out? One of them taps his cigarette ash and goes, no, we're not. We just spent the $500,000 on that for this one journey. We're going to leave it here in the desert to rot. We're $1.5 million to the good. And it's like, okay, fine, but how are you going to get home? And as the American guy said that, this general, across the skyline, across the horizon, comes this old minibus with the exhaust pipe, a tailpipe, hanging off it and clanking and groaning and no windows in it, bullet holes all over it, picks up these Russian guys and just drives off over a hill. And everybody at that point just stood there. The U.S., the generals, everybody stood there and applauded, not just for the balls that it took to do this, but for the incredibly sharp business minds that it took. I mean, these were guys who were prepared to source and buy a plane that would only have to make it through that one flight. And by the looks of it, that's all it could do. And it just fell apart and rotted there in the desert. The generator's up there, so's the plane. The guys are long gone.
Incredible story. Hey, Matt, you know, when we think about a crew like this going into Afghanistan, you know, bringing in something that the military units need. Well, when we think Afghanistan, we think, at least I do, poppy, heroin. Yeah. Are they basically, working in the drug trade?
This is absolutely true. There's a lot of heroin coming in and out of a lot of heroin coming out of Afghanistan, and nobody knows how it's getting there. How it's getting out officially. What we do know is that there have been Afghan officials who've tried, sort of Serpico-type characters, who've tried to stand up and go, look what's happening at the airport. You know, this is ridiculous. The same guys who are smuggling the heroin out happen to have jobs in customs, and they happen to help these guys load these massive great cargo planes. And just as they say that, amazingly, you know, they'll get sacked from the job and moved off to some place in the provinces. Yes, these guys do. They take heroin out some of the time, and there's this trail. It's very tantalizing glimpses of some of the airports where there have been great big heroin catchments found and seized have been some of the airports that these guys use. Then again, sometimes they will get advance warning. Again, we talked about this sort of loose affiliations of networks and loyalty. You know, it's not uncommon for some of them to be tipped off coming into, let's say, Moscow or let's say wherever else. Somewhere in Kazakhstan or somewhere in Africa, but there's a reception committee waiting for them. And what they'll do, because again, this plane is one of the toughest planes ever made, they can land in a field of maybe 20 kilometers away before anybody sees them, land on a dirt track, a flat piece of desert, whatever. They'll just land there, take what they can, set fire to the plane, and scarpa. They will be off.
Oh my gosh.
And the plane will either be left humming and clicking like the, you know, like the Marie Celeste, like one of these, or it'll be, they'll find it torched. And they found these planes torched from Guatemala and Mexico to Kazakhstan to Russia and Siberia itself. They find these planes torched, and every time they do, they track them down and they go, oh, hang on, this one turned around in midair just after a call came into the pilot. I wonder why.
Interesting. You know, Matt, you're talking about them being Russians, but do you know if there are any Americans or Brits involved in this network?
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that There are a lot of people from a lot of sketchy backgrounds involved in this trade. Yes, there is one American whom my lawyers would rather I didn't name, but actually, yeah, he's very well connected, and he uses some of the same staff at the moment. He lives out in the Arab Emirates. Enjoying a life of some luxury, and he's part of it. But the fact is that those guys tend to be higher up, so that the guys from the Emirates, the Americans, the Europeans, the Australians, even, you know, a lot of the Africans and the South Americans tend to be the money guys. They tend to be the businessmen, the wheeler dealers.
Wow.
The fact is that because the Soviet Union collapsed when it did, and let's not forget, this was a time at which in the rest of the world, it was the start of the 90s, the start of the sort of freewheeling, outsource it all, the customer is always right 1990s, all around the world. And suddenly we got this influx, this massive injection of ex-Soviet planes that were going cheap, ex-Soviet soldiers and airmen that suddenly had no jobs and would work for food, if you like.
Wow.
And, of course, Kalashnikovs that were no longer needed by the official Soviet military. So really, conditions were right for this whole generation of, if you like, you know, the poor grunts to be the guys who have to fly the damn things.
Well, Matt, it is an incredible story, and in the book, I just can't wait to read the whole thing. It is called Outlaws, Inc. The author, Matt Potter, has been our guest. What a delight for sharing the story with us. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you
appreciate
so much.
Your time.
Great stuff. Cheers.